Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So how about this imponderable? Do men have fundamentally different brains from women? How about gay brains and straight brains? Much of the current science tells us that our gray matter in the early stages of development is organized by the hormones that it's exposed to, and that those chemicals go on to define how we will perceive sexuality. It's hardwired, in other words, by the amounts of estrogen or testosterone that you get in very early stages of development. But that science could be fundamentally flawed, according to our next guest. She is Rebecca Jordan Young, a sociomedical scientist and assistant professor of women's studies at Barnard College, Columbia University. And her new book, Brainstorm, The Flaws in the Science of Sex Differences, asserts that the assumptions that scientists have made about sexuality and brain development and how those assumptions have colored the research into sex and sex differences could, in fact, be very flawed. Professor Jordan Young, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much for having me, Brian.
First, what is brain organization science?
Well, brain organization science is broadly a very diverse set of research studies that all supposedly provide evidence for that theory you just described, the idea that early hormone exposures create a fundamentally masculine or feminine brain, a gay brain or a straight brain. So the particular studies are wildly varied. They're all over the map. A lot of them begin with people who are known to have unusual hormone exposures and compare them to people who are not known to have such exposures. Others start at the other end with people that scientists think are distinct from other people sexually or in terms of their gender identity. And this, it's sort of a one-stop shopping theory that is used to explain virtually anything that might be different in sexuality or personality.
And your book takes on a series of assumptions about sex differences in the brain, but you're very careful to say that you don't reject the idea that our brains are fundamentally different in regards to gender, right?
Well, that's a great question. I would say I don't reject the idea that it's possible. I don't reject the idea that there are there is, in fact, one teeny little difference in structure. It's very small. Nobody has any idea what it does. It's a little nucleus in the hypothalamus. But in fact, there isn't nearly as much difference, either structurally or functionally, as most people believe and as most scientists claim if you systematically look at the evidence. But what I look at specifically is the idea that any differences that we do see can be attributed to these early hormones and therefore come in a fundamental way, you know, prior to any sort of interaction or socialization.
And what's at stake here, in your opinion? Is it just how we perceive masculinity and femininity and how we define those things? Is it understanding who comes out gay and who comes out straight or other? Is it, stereotyping with respect to what kinds of jobs and majors people get tracked to, or all of the above?
Yeah, all of the above, absolutely. One thing that's at stake socially is the idea that, an example, disparate impact analysis is a particular kind of legal strategy where if a group of people find that they're not moving ahead, say, in a given corporation or profession, let's say women, that...
Just
as a random example, which wouldn't really happen, but let's say it did, even if individual women can't prove specific instances of discrimination, which is plausible because often discrimination takes place behind people's back. You don't have the information for that. What disparate impact can do is say there are certain policies in the corporation that affect one group more than another group, and you can say the fact that women don't get promoted at the same rates or that they don't, after all these years, occupy the same high levels of management would tell you that there's something going on here structurally. What brain organization theory might say instead is, no, you're not going to see women moving into the higher ranks because they don't want to. They're not as interested in occupying those ranks. They don't put as much time and energy into their careers as men, and that comes from their predispositions early. I want to quickly say another thing that's at stake for me. The science is at stake. I think that biology is at stake. be our ability to do really interesting science about human development is very much at stake, because right now we're stuck in a stale idea that really doesn't make a lot of sense.
And my guest is Rebecca Jordan-Young, sociomedical scientist and assistant professor of women's studies at Barnard. Her new book, Brainstorm, The Flaws in the Science of Sex Differences. We have a few minutes if anybody wants to call in on this, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. People have been discussing and debating and researching it for 50 years and more, 212-433-9692. And this book adds to that discussion by closely analyzing some of what is assumed to be the science of sex differences, 212-433-9692. How much do you reject what I think is becoming conventionally accepted about brain differences and certain kinds of aptitudes? Now, not about every individual, but in general with respect to gender. So, you know, the idea that men are going to wind up better at math and science mm-hmm. because of something in the brain. Women are more relational, so maybe they're going to wind up and some of the research says women make better CEOs. So it's not necessarily that things that hold people down necessarily better CEOs because they're more relational. So whatever management skills it takes at the very, very top, women may have more of that in their brains. And you know this whole world.
Right.
Did you look closely at how much of that seems to actually be proven, and how much of that you would question as actually learned behavior?
Yeah, yes, I did. I mean, what I'm looking at, again, is my project was to look at literally every single human study that relates to this theory. It was a 15-year project. There are two ways that you can answer that question about what do we know about these fundamental differences. For example, you said aptitudes or in interests. First off, it's important to recognize that if you don't look at what causes any particular differences, but you just pay attention to what are men and women actually like, what are their personalities, and so on. For any one of these things that's claimed to be a fundamental sex difference, there's much more variation among women or among men than there is difference between the two groups. So from the very beginning, it's important to recognize that sex is not usually the best way to divide a population of people, whether you're talking about corporate reasons or for education or whatever. But I can also say that based on the entire universe of human studies, there is not consistent evidence that any cognitive trait or any personality trait, including the ones that probably do differ on average between men and women. The main one I think of is this mental rotation skill. It's a very specific spatial relation skill. But there are lots of reasons, including the studies I've looked at, to say that that probably has very little, if anything, to do with early hormones.
Mark in the Village, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. You know, I can speak from personal experience about the effect of hormones on personality. I'm a gay man living with HIV, and about 10 years ago, I went on testosterone injections because of low testosterone, and it completely changed my personality. I had never been in a physical fight ever in my life. I hated anything that was violent. Even football games I didn't enjoy. I couldn't stand boxing matches. I became so aggressive. I got into fist fights. I began finding myself having to watch boxing matches because I needed to see that violence. I began watching football games. I remember being in a cab going out one night and, like, pounding my fist, itching for a fight. It really fundamentally changed my personality and character dramatically, so much so that everybody began calling me an a-hole, and I had to stop the drug. So I think hormones have a huge impact on our personality, and I think we need to accept that and somehow work with that in order to get over the effects that high testosterone or high estrogen or whatever can have on who we are as people. And I speak from personal experience on this.
That's a fascinating story. And, Professor, I guess anybody who's been on testosterone for medical reasons becomes sort of a natural experiment.
Well, yes and no. Here's the tricky thing. And without discounting people's actual experiences, what they feel like, the very tricky thing here is that Studies that use placebo control with testosterone, in fact, don't find that it makes people more aggressive. Mm. And one of the interesting things about testosterone is, number one, it's psychologically powerful for us all. It has great meaning. But it's more than psychologically powerful. It is physically powerful. Testosterone has a wide range of effects that include things like affecting our metabolism, our energy levels, our muscle development, our hair growth, the texture of our skin. So, for example, it actually is kind of hard to do placebo-controlled studies of testosterone because there are so many other effects.
Observable effects.
People can tell whether they're on the placebo or on testosterone. But, in fact, I've done lots and lots of research on this, and many, many people who know that they're getting testosterone express exactly the same kind of thing that our caller just expressed. But the controlled research shows something
That's
really different.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Mark, you didn't find yourself suddenly attracted to women, did you?
No. But let me tell you, I mean, I know myself, mm-hmm. and I didn't know about or expect these changes, but the fundamental change was striking in my personality. Everyone noticed it, and once I went off the drug, it stopped, and I have never watched a boxing match since then. I have friends who are going through the same thing.
Mark, thank you so much.
There's one other thing about what that comment brought up, which is the idea that hormones later on in life, anytime after childhood, adolescence, et cetera, it's a different idea than the idea that early hormones, while the brain is still fundamentally developing, in the womb, that sets us on this path. It's a different set of scientific work and so on. So, on one hand, that doesn't speak directly to this theory and this idea. On the other hand, there's a lot of other interesting work that would challenge that.
We just have a minute left.
Okay.
You conclude that we should move, in your opinion, to a more biological view of development. Why do you use the word biological?
Well, because I think actually I'm really interested in how our bodies matter to who we are, how we experience ourselves in the world. But right now we're stuck with this really simplistic idea about how our bodies matter that's not very much in tune with what geneticists would say or developmental biologists. Right now we try to do studies that try to divide what is indivisible. In fact, it doesn't work that we have biology over here and socialization here, and if you can scrape off socialization, you could look at the real biology. There's no blueprint. Biology is this really fascinating process that only can unfold in a given context. So that's what I mean. Our context matters.
Rebecca Jordan-Young, sociomedical scientist, professor of women's studies as well at Barnard College, Columbia University. Her new book, Brainstorm, The Flaws in the Science of Sex Differences. Very interesting stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.